It's always exciting to me to begin a new book. Now, the book of Ruth is 4 chapters long. I always encourage people, and even you, I'll wait, that when we start a book, to go through it with us. Now, sometimes you can't be here 4 straight weeks. I know that's tough. But you can get the tapes or somehow go through it with us. Go through and stick with it to the end, to all 4 chapters, and see if God doesn't teach you something. It won't be me, but God will teach you something. He will, if you'll just stick with it. So we make the tapes available. We just do everything we can. As a matter of fact, lately I've been getting a lot of emails, and I just answer the emails now about the scriptures and this and that. So we're teaching on email, and it's kind of fun. We're going to begin the book of Ruth. Now, it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled. Now, you know already what time it is. We just studied the book of Judges. Remember, the book of Judges covered about 300 to 350 years of time. Well, sometime during that time, here's a story. A simple, short story. It's not fiction. It's real. It really happened. But it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. We're not sure, by the way, if you're wondering, well, who is the author of this book? Well, obviously God, the Holy Spirit. But who wrote the book? People are not sure. Most believe it was Samuel. But that is up for debate. In approximately 1322 B.C., approximately, give or take years. Now, it came to pass during the time when you and I just finished Judges, when we studied Judges, during the time of one of the judges, there was a famine in the land. And goes on to say, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went and he traveled in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his 2 sons. You have an amazing verse 1. We have learned the entire story. There was, during the time of the judges, a famine in the land. Now, famines, there are, I believe, 13 famines, specific famines, mentioned in Scripture about that. And with each famine comes the thought that it is a judgment from God. There's a famine in the land. Now you remember during the Judges study that we did, remember how the people would cry out to God when they'd get in trouble? He would save them. They'd be thankful for a minute. They'd get comfortable and then go right back into something. Remember the spiral downward that they would do. And God allowed or sent even a famine in the land. That was from God. 13 famines specifically talked about. A judgment from God, each one. We learn a few things in verse 1. Obviously, it was during the time of the judges. Some people believe in the time that Gideon would have been a judge. But again, that's not going to change the truth one way or the other. But you'll notice that there was a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah. Probably you know this, but Bethlehem means house of bread. Judah means praise. So the city is called Bethlehem, Judah, the house of bread and praise. Of course, we all know that later, a little, or maybe about 1,000 years, a little more than 1,000 years later, Messiah, the bread of life, will be born there in the house of bread. In the house of praise. Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to another country because the famine was, the people were, there was no food. And so this man and his wife and 2 sons, they went down to Moab. The name of the man was Elimelech. The name of his wife, Naomi. The name of his 2 sons, Mahlon and Chilion. Ephrathites, of the tribe of Ephraim, of Bethlehem, Judah. They came into the country of Moab and they continued there. Or in American, They went on down south, it's southeast, and they stayed there. The famine was so great that this man took his wife and his two children and he left the country. Abraham did that, remember? He was Abram. In the book of Genesis, there was a famine, remember? And Abram left that country that God told him to be in and went down to Egypt. What happened when he got there? He got himself into a terrible jam. He lied to save his life and got himself in some trouble. Did he learn his lesson? No, 25 years later, still telling the same lie. Old Abram, just like you and I, but we laugh at him. Well, interesting to note a couple of things. The story of Ruth, the book of Ruth, begins in Bethlehem, Judah, and ends in Bethlehem, Judah. Now, here's a man and his wife and their two sons who should have stayed in the promised land. But things were so difficult, he probably panicked, thought, my family's going to starve if we stay here. So he went to find food. That's not what God wanted them to do. What you have here is a story of a prodigal family. When Jesus tells the parable of the prodigal son, although it was a parable to teach me a lesson, you will learn as you go through life, and many of you already have, that really happened over and over and over. Here's a prodigal family. They should stay there and trust God and cry out to God, they leave the country. What's it going to cause them? Well, it's going to bring them some trouble. Just like it did with Abram, just like it did with everybody that you see. The prodigal son himself left and wasted his life on riotous living. Where did they go? They came to a country, Moab, and they stayed there. Psalm 108, verse 9, Psalm 108, verse 9 says this, God speaking, the prophet speaking, in God's place, so God would be speaking, God the Holy Spirit. Moab is my wash pot. Over Edom will I cast out my shoe. Over Philistia will I triumph. What does God say about Moab? It's my wash pot. What's a wash pot? The place of refuse. The restroom. Where things are waste, garbage, out. God says, Moab is my garbage can, my refuse center, my restroom, where waste is to go. And we have Elimelech taking his family down to God's restroom, down to the garbage can, down to the place of refuse. Remember, the prodigal son did the same thing, didn't he? He went off into a far country, and there he was, ready to eat with the pigs in the slop. Yet in his father's house, which is where he belonged, in his father's house, even the servants were doing better. So you have a family and you learn, I hope you learn, we should learn, don't leave God when things get tough. Don't go find your own pastures when things are hard. Because you're going to be sorry that you did. If I do that, I'm going to be sorry that I did it. Oh, but you don't know how rough it is. Yes, it's a famine and everybody's hurting. But you see, you have God to depend on to cry out to. Cry out to Him. Humble yourself. But that wasn't the way. And you notice it's not the way today either. We have running water, and that's a blessing. Now, when we want to take a shower, we want that water to be hot. But we want to get a drink, we want that water to be cold. Right? Now, when it's cold outside, we want hot inside. And when it's hot outside, we want cold inside. True? Just so long as we're comfortable. whatever that takes. And a little discomfort, especially in our society, is really pretty hard to deal with. I mean, today, the power went off for 45 minutes. Here, oh Lord, what will we do? We're going to die. We can't see. We have to go to the restroom. There's no lights. We're suffering for Jesus. And we pray, oh Lord, let it be quick. And we look for ways to get out of it. We call the entire United States of Idaho. We need to talk to the governor. The power's out from Spokane Street all the way to McGuire. What can he do? National Guard? Air Force? Can we do something? Because immediately we can't deal with life. Our whole lives are based around what's comfortable. And you see a prodigal family. Oh, they're in stress. They're under pressure. They're going to starve. Jesus said to me one time, don't worry about what you're going to eat. And I said, but what are we going to eat? Don't ask. Your Father knows that you need these things. Don't worry about what you're going to wear. I'm going to look so stupid if you make me wear those. So we purchase them cheaply and sew expensive names on them. And we wouldn't be caught dead in certain kinds of clothing. I mean, unless it's a joke. And here we go. The head to the garbage dump, the garbage can, the place of refuse, because it's better there. Now think about it just for a moment. Let it sink in where you go when you leave your Father's house. Your Father says, you know, I need you to look at me. Didn't your dad or mom ever say that when they were trying to rebuke you? Look at me. And God says, look up here. And you go. And God says, all right, I'll just turn the heat up. And instead of looking up, you run off to get out of the heat. And all along, he's been calling you, saying, "You look here. I want to show you. I want to teach you. I want to communicate to you something. Look here." And you run to the restroom. I'll live in there. It's nicer. And it sounds funny when you put it in English. See, this was written in Hebrew and in Aramaic. The Old Testament wasn't written in American. It's a shock to some people I know. Well, this family should not have gone. But they did. Well, hindsight's 20/20. Okay, there they are. Elimelech. I love his name. It means my God is king. Well, except in this particular case, he's not. I'm going to go and find my own pasture. I'll make sure my family is taken care of. My God is king sometimes. Elimelech. My God is king. His wife's name is Naomi. That means pleasant. He had two sons who, I don't know what was wrong with them. Mahlon and Chilion. Mahlon means unhealthy. Sickly. Something to grow up with, huh? Chilion means puny. Or literally wasting away. There's a nice little baby. What's wrong with him? I don't know. Let's call him Chilion. Sounds like, you know, I don't know if you know this, but they didn't name their babies right away. Like we name them before they're born. I think I'll call them Bob. That doesn't fit a little baby, does it? Fits a tomato, but not a little baby. So you call them Sweetheart and Kutsum Pie and all those names that you mothers give them. Because Bob, right? But they didn't do that in those days. And you may not know this, but they would, when the baby was born, they would watch the baby for a while, and they would name that baby, that boy or girl, based on what that thing was like, based on what it looked like and acted like. And these are a couple of sick boys. Why do you think they were sick? I got an idea why I think that one was unhealthy and one was wasting away. I think they were out of the will of God. And they should not have gone down there. They went down to the place of garbage when they should have stayed in the promised land. It's hard in the promised land. Yes, it is. It's hard sometimes. Yes, sometimes when God says, well, we're going to turn up the heat because I want you to be stronger, then you run from the heat, go to the garbage. Well, there you have them. What happens? They continued there. Verse 3 says, and Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. Could have knocked you over with a feather, huh? He died. Well, that happens to everybody. The statistics on death right now for humans are at 100% for 1997. We'll see what happens in 98 with cloning. Right now, it's still 100%. People die. And he died. I don't know if it was early or not, but the idea carried in the language is he shouldn't have been down there. And now he's gone. And what happened? Well, it was after the death of Elimelech that his wife was left there and her two sons. And at that time, they took them wives of the women of Moab. When you get away from God, everyone listen, when you get away from God, you or me, that's when trouble comes. If you think it's bad with God because of the famine in the land, then see what happens when you get away from Him. That's when the trouble comes. And when trouble comes, or when there's difficult times, the first thing that they did was move away from God. They left the land, which He did not want them to do. He says, I've given this to you, my children. You keep it. It's yours. They left because things were tough there. Do you and I do that? It's interesting to note that where the different places you go, there are different levels of toughness. For instance, if you head on down to New Mexico, right there at the border, it's basically Mexican-American. Not far from the border, though, it starts to get a little rougher, more quaint. And then maybe an hour in, 30 to 45 minutes to an hour in, all of a sudden, dirt floors, no restrooms, 10 and 12 people sharing the same one little room. And you know something? It gets worse as you go on down south. So I guess tough difficulties really are in the eye of the beholder, aren't they? Because what you and I would call difficult, some people would kill to have. Some people would be thrilled. They would be living in luxury to be in what you and I are calling unlivable situations. Sometimes our car doesn't work right. I've been in Africa. And you're in the jungle. And people walk for miles to go to church. Miles. I cannot imagine it. I saw it with my own eyes, but I cannot imagine me doing that. How did you get through there? There are snakes and things. And you've come miles and miles. Some a two-day journey to hear the Bible study and to see the doctor. Get a call here. Some people heard the radio program, and that's a blessing. Where's your church located? I said, well, we're here in Post Falls near this huge building. Oh, that's too far to drive. We live in Hayden Lake. Now, I didn't say, you wimp, you... I just thought it. And then had to apologize to God. Because, you know, when you're angry with your brother for no reason, you've committed murder in your heart. It's a heart issue. I thought, Lord, come on. Shake that man. too far to drive. When you move away from God, trouble comes. Your first step is to step away and get to where you think everything's better. And you'll notice your next step is instantly continuing to disobey and add to the sin. What did the boys do? Their dad died. The boys married two girls from Moab. Let me read to you Deuteronomy 7, verse 3, which I'm sure they knew. Deuteronomy 7, verse 3 says, "Neither shall you make marriages with them," the people that are in the land and around you. Your daughter shall not give, or you shall not give unto his son, nor his daughter shall you take unto your son." Who's guilty? Mama and boys. It's against God's law. First you step away from God to get to where you're a little more comfortable. Next you're going to be outright disobeying Him. That's the way it works. So be careful. Well, look at this. They took them wives of the women of Moab from the garbage can. The name of the one was Orpah, which means deer or fawn. And the name of the other, Ruth, which means friend. Or it could be translated friendship. And they dwelled there about 10 years. Years have gone by. They're married, been married a long time. Not having children, well, I blame you. I mean, sickly and pining, you know, wasting away and puny. I mean, both, you know, I get their names confused now. They're both sick dudes. No children. And they marry these girls, Orpah and Ruth. In about 10 years, what happens? And sickly and wasting away, die. You're not surprised. You expected it. I know you did. You named them that. Mother did. This kid's not going to last. He got married. And the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. I remember the prodigal son. He had quite a bit when he left. And he went to a far country and he wasted his living. Now it's all gone. And there he is at the bottom of the barrel, ready to eat with pigs. And he thinks, "What? I'm at the bottom. What do? I want to go home. I want to go back where I belong. This is stupid. I should not be here. I should have known better. I'm going to go home and I'll tell my dad, please let me come home. I don't even want to be called your son anymore. I'm ashamed of myself. Just let me be one of the hired servants. Because see, the hired hands get better food than this, where I'm at now. It's better in my father's house. Even, well, the psalmist says, I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of the Lord than dwell in the tents of the wicked. What does that mean? I'd rather be a servant at home where I belong than partying and doing everything else that's going on around me. I want to go home." And the prodigal son says to him, "Father," of course he never gets to say it because he's got a speech all planned, but he never gets to say it because his dad was waiting for him. Well, now Elimelech is dead, Mahlon and Chilion, sickly and wasting away, are gone. Well, she got up with her daughters-in-law, verse 6 says, that she might return from the country of the garbage can, of Moab. For she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited His people in giving them food, bread. At home, in my father's house, it's better. What am I doing here? Oh, what a dummy I am. How did I get here? Oh, I've wasted years of my life. Now, I want to go home. Wonder if they'll let her in the country. Wonder if she's got the right paperwork and visas. Maybe she won't look the same. Maybe they won't recognize her. What if the border's closed? Well, the Bible says, she went forth, verse 7, out of the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her. They went on the way to return to the land of Judah. They were on their way to go home. At least it was her home. Orpah and Ruth are with her. Naomi stops and says to them, "Go home. Go return each one to her mother's house." You guys, you two girls need to go home. Naomi knows something that the two girls may not understand. Naomi knows there's nothing for you there. You'll be an outcast. I don't know what will happen to you. See, you're not Jewish. I don't know what will happen. It will not go well for you there. They're going to look down on you. You don't want to go. Just go on home. But I'm going to go back to my father's house. And she says, you know, God bless you. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me, with your husbands and me. You've been good wives. You've been good to me. I love you guys. Go home. It's not going to be a pretty sight over there. See, I'm going back. I have nothing. I'm going to go there. I have no one to support me. I am headed for poverty and misery for the rest of my days. But you see, it's better to be a doorkeeper there than to be outside. So I want to go home. The Lord grant you, verse 9, that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband. Go back, marry some nice guys from your own home country, and live happily ever after. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice, and they cried. You can imagine these three women with all that tissue. I mean, you can imagine the mess. And they said to her, "Surely we will return with you to your people." Nope, we're going with you. Naomi said, "You turn again, my daughters. Go home. Why will you go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb that they may be your husband? Do you think I'm going to have more children? Turn again, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to even get married again. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband also tonight and should bear sons, would you wait for them till they were grown? If I could get married tonight and have kids almost immediately, you'd still have to wait till they were old enough to get married. No, my daughters, it grieves me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." She recognizes, I should not have been here. Me and my family should not have been here. We always recognize when you're about ready to eat with pigs, you all of a sudden go, "This stinks. What am I doing?" And usually, let's face it, go ahead, be honest. Don't you and I wait till we're right there before we decide, "Man, I am sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired. I want to go home." Didn't many of us just wait till we were right there in the trash? Well, she says, "The hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Well, they lifted up their voice and they cried again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth stuck to her. It means grabbed hold of her and wouldn't let go. And she said this, "Behold, your sister-in-law is gone." Orpah has gone now. She cried, she gave her a hug, kissed her, and went on home. Ruth held on. And Naomi says, "Your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and into her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. You go back too." Now listen, something has taken place here. Both women said, "I will go with you." But one of them didn't go. How come? I think there was a change of heart in one of the women and not a change of heart in the other. They both said the same words, but one of them was sincere about it and one of them wasn't. And that's where it comes down to always. You're going to find in your life that your heart is real when the power of God is there in your heart. That's all. Nothing else. You're going to do things because people are seeing you do them. You're going to do things because you think you're supposed to. You're going to do things because it makes others think you're holy. And instead it ought to be, "God will be blessed by this. God will be glorified if I do this. This is for God. I'm sweeping for God. I'm teaching the children for God. I work around the church. I work at home. I'm doing this for God. That's when it's real. And when it is, you don't have to run around telling everybody how real it is. Oh, it's so real in me. Don't even say it. Just quietly do it. And I think Orpah said, I'm going with you. Now, there's no husband for you. You're not going to probably find one over there. What I'm telling you is we're headed for poverty and for misery. We got that now. Yeah, but we're going to have it over there. And I'm going home. And one woman went back. You know, when you got the running water and you want a shower, you just want it to be hot. I do. But when you get a drink, you just want it to be cold. I don't know if it'll be hot or cold. I'm not even sure there'll be water. Well, you know, on second thought, you're right. I'm young. Maybe I ought to find another husband. Yeah, I love you and all, but you're right. See, they're going to put me down over there. I will be a second-class citizen. If that high, they're going to make fun of me. They might call me names. It might get difficult. So, now that you mention it, you're right. I'll go back. But Ruth made a decision, and I believe Ruth made a decision for God here. And I believe the decision is a real, live decision. Look what goes on here. She says, you know, your sister-in-law is gone. You go on back with her. She's gone back to her gods. You go back. And Ruth said, don't ask me to leave you. Do not ask me anymore to leave you. I've made my mind up. Or to return from following after you. Listen closely. For where you go, I will go. Ruth said, where you go, I go. Listen. At that moment, she is saying, for the rest of my life, I forsake all my own wants. For where you go, I go. From this moment on, I will not want it if I can't have it. Have you done it yet? Or we have a little bit of that Orpah in us. Well, where you go, I will go. Where you live, I will live. Listen, forsaking her home forever. From this day forward, I forsake my own wants. Where you go, I go. That's just all there is to it. And I forsake my home forever. Where you live, from this moment on, that's where I will live. Your people shall be my people. Listen, this is a tough one. Forsaking her own culture, her own society. There's a young man, a Calvary pastor, who went down into Mexico to share Jesus. And he spent time with them, and he began to love the people, and he gave up his American citizenship and became a Mexican citizen so that he could win them to Jesus Christ. And man, I remember thinking, oh man, how could you give up being American to go down into there? I mean, it's poverty. It's yuck. You know what he was saying? I forsake from this day forward, my own culture, my own society. And your people now, because I'm going to spend my life for you, your people now become my people. I think there was a real heart change in that man, and he was willing to give up anything just so that others could have Jesus Christ. Now, I know many people who talk a big talk, but that's pretty tough, isn't it? I forsake my own wants. I forsake my home forever. I forsake my society and my culture. When will she ever go back to Moab to see Mama? She won't. Your people shall be my people. And look, your God, my God. She made a decision for God, forsaking all other gods. Little did she know, that was one of the commandments. The first one, I am the Lord your God. You shall not have strange gods before me. She said, from this day forward, God is my God. I forsake all others, whatever the cost. And she doesn't stop there. She says, where you die, I will die. That means she is forsaking her own life. Are we there yet? Have you given your heart to God and just said, you do what you want with me? And I know you remember Dr. Livingstone there in Africa. I think I've told you before, but if I haven't, you remember he spent his life. And I remember a couple of things about his life. One, he needed help there in Africa in the jungles. And they sent him a note via courier that said, we have four young men, called of the Lord. Their hearts are to come and assist you. And they have a burning desire to serve you so that you can serve these people and tell them about Jesus. All you need to do is send us a map with the roads to get in there. He sent a note back and said, if they need roads, they are not called by God. And he didn't want them. He wanted hearts who just said, we'll find you. We're coming now and we will find you or die trying. That's the heart he wanted. So he said, tell those four men on fire, stay there and relax. If they need a road, we don't want them. You think that's pretty tough? Hey, where you go, I go. Forsake my own wants. Where you live, I live. Forsake my own home. Your people, my people. Forsake my own society and culture. Your God, my God. Forsake every other God. Where you die, I die. Forsake my own life. Another thing you learn about Dr. Livingstone as you read his biography is that when he died in Africa, the tribe that he was working with cut his heart out. And they wrapped his body up and they carried his body, carried it across the continent of Africa. Put him on a ship to have him go buried in England. But his heart, they buried in Africa because they said, he's from there, you can bury his body there, but his heart belongs here. He died working there, forsaking his own life. Notice this, and some of you need to pray about this. All of us need to, but some of you specifically. This decision Ruth made is for all time. All time. Not just good times. Not just when it's convenient. Not just until something better comes along. Not just when it's practical. All the time. From this day, for the rest of my life, I give up my life and I am with you. Whatever happens to you, happens to me. Do you see a heart that has been changed? I think you do. That's what I say. That's what you say when we say, I have decided to follow Jesus. That's why Jesus said to you and I, sit down and count the cost. You want to follow me? And in Luke, we do get excited. You remember? Jesus preached a sermon so powerful that everybody was excited. One guy comes running up and says, oh my gosh, I want to go with you. I'll go wherever you go, I'll go. And Jesus said, you know, foxes have holes in the ground. Birds have nests in the air, in the trees. But the Son of Man doesn't even have a place to sleep tonight. You come with me, you will have no home, no place to sleep tonight. One guy did say, well, let me bury my father first. His father wasn't sick. His father wasn't even close to dying, looks like. Basically, all he was saying was, let me just get my stuff together. How long is that going to take you? Oh, I don't know, 2 years, 5, 10, I don't know.
just let me wait till my dad dies and tie things up at home. And Jesus said, no. No, you come today, right now. You let the dead bury the dead. Was he being hard? No. What he was saying was, your heart's not here. Your heart is not here. You haven't turned it over to me. Ruth made a decision, I believe, for all time. Not just good times, not just convenient, not just when it was practical, but from that day forever. She doesn't know what's coming. She expects a hard life. Now God's going to bless. Ruth is going to get married. I'll tell you how the story ends before we even get there. She is going to get married because she's a beauty. She's going to get married, and she's going to marry a guy a lot older than her. I mean, today people would frown. And they're going to have a son named Obed. And Obed's going to grow up, and he's going to be semi-healthy, and he's going to get married, and they're going to have a son named Jesse. Jesse's going to grow up, and he's going to get married and have a bunch of kids. And the youngest one, the one that they consider useless, the one they're a little bit ashamed of, is named David, who's going to become king of Israel. A woman from the restroom. A woman from the trash. A woman from the refuse, garbage, according to God's Word, is in the lineage of Jesus Christ. I think that's so that you and I would know He loves us too. Because we came out of the trash. We came from the filth and the dirt. We are sinners, and He saved every one of us. I believe we ought to pray about these things. You know, now chapter 1 is over. Here's what happens. So, when she saw, verse 18, that Ruth was steadfastly minded to go with her, she gave up talking. Sometimes you just know you're wasting your breath. Some of you are that way. You know, my mind is made up, and you say that, and people look at you and say, there's no need talking to her. There's no need talking to her. Their mind, at this point, their heart and their mind are set. You're not going to change it. They did that to Jesus. It ought to be the same with you and I. As soon as I say, I'm going to serve God. There's no need trying to talk Him out of it. His heart is set. Well, so they too went. So they came to Bethlehem, house of bread. And it came to pass, when they came to Bethlehem, that all the city was moved. And they said this, is that Naomi? She doesn't look the same, but it looks like her. She's been gone a long time. She said unto them, don't call me Naomi, which means pleasant. Call me Mara, which means bitter. For the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. God has dealt bitterly with me. I went out full. I had my husband and my sons. And the Lord has brought me home again empty. She's not insulting Ruth. She's just saying, my whole family is dead. Why do you call me then pleasant, or Naomi? Seeing the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has afflicted me. So Naomi, notice God still calls her pleasant. She says, call me bitter. God says, so Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of barley harvest. They came out of Moab just in time for the work to be going on, and you'll see how that all kind of works. Have you decided, as you look at chapter 1, and you're going to see in here the story of how Jesus redeemed us, the law, how it was written in the law that it would have to be a kinsman, Goel, or a kinsman redeemer. So He'd need to become human. Whoever redeems you and I must be human. They must be a kinsman. Can't be some outer space brother. Can't be some UFO agent. Can't be some angel or demon. Must be a man, according to the law. And you're going to find out how it all works and how Jesus became a man. God became flesh and dwelt among us to become our Goel, our kinsman redeemer. You're going to see how the law works as we study through Ruth together. And listen now, before we close, listen to the sin of Sodom. You think, does it fit here? Yeah, yeah. Because we're thinking about Ruth willing to give her life up and to follow God the rest of her life. Coming from the dirt and the filth of Moab. When you think of Sodom and Gomorrah, what do you think of? Yeah, sexual sin. Homosexuality. But that was not the only sin. Just like it's not the only sin today in this country. Listen to this. Ezekiel 16, verse 49. Ezekiel 16, verse 49. Listen closely. It may shock you. Why did God destroy Sodom and Gomorrah? Was it only for the gay movement? Listen. Ezekiel 16, verse 49. Behold, and he's speaking to Israel now. This was the iniquity of your sister, Sodom. Is that an insult or what? Talking to his children, he says, your sister, Sodom. Your sisters. You're related. You're acting the same way. This was the sin of your sister, Sodom. Listen. Pride. Now, this may shock you. You ready for this? Plenty to eat. Bible says fullness of bread. An abundance of free time. An abundance of idleness. Besides the sexual sin, there was pride, fullness of bread, so much so that they're throwing food away, and an abundance of time on their hands to do whatever they wanted to do. And neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy. Sexual sin, pride. Pride comes in amazing packages in Christianity today. Plenty to eat, so much so that the country was literally throwing food out. An abundance of free time to where they could go to all the movies they wanted to. They could just hang out. Just, what are we going to do tonight? I don't know, I'm getting tired of doing this. And she would not strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy, ignoring and neglecting the needs of those people who are really hurting and suffering. Doesn't that surprise you? Doesn't it get a little uncomfortable when you read that verse slowly and listen to what that says? And then ask yourself, have I said, where you go, I will go. Where you live, I will live. Your people are my people. You are my God. There are no other gods. Where you die, I die. Of course, we don't have to worry about the Lord dying. He died and rose again. Have you committed? If you haven't, you can. But don't do it because you feel bad. Don't do it because you feel guilty. Don't do it because it sounds like it's the right thing to do. Do it because you have decided, you have counted the costs, and you have said simply by the power of the Holy Spirit, I want the rest of my life to be lived for Jesus Christ. Let's bow our heads as we worship together. Sometimes when we do these Bible studies, people say, gosh, I left feeling really beaten. Well, don't do that. Leave feeling changed. Or leave saying, I don't care one way or the other. But there should be no middle of the road. There's a Ruth and there's an Orpah. And both of them were going to go. And one of them really did. And that's been the same story throughout history. Some were going to go. And some really did. If you want to be serious about your God, tonight's the night to do that. Simply put, tonight's the night. right there in the privacy of your chair between you and God. And He knows when I'm serious, and He knows when I'm not. So let's bow our heads and we'll just pray together.